Hi, everybody. Welcome to our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast brought to you by Loot Crate, the best surprise you know is coming. Be sure and check them out at lootcrate.com. I am Hub Arkush, the editor and general manager at Pro Football Weekly, and our managing editor, Arthur Arkush, got the week off because he is in Mobile, Alabama, with senior editor Eric Edholm covering the Senior Bowl. They will have the Pro Football Weekly podcast for you from the Senior Bowl in Mobile. Lots going on down there, but it allowed me a chance to get in and bring in a couple of special guests, two of our favorites at Pro Football Weekly. Our personnel expert, the author of our Pro Football Weekly NFL Draft Guide magazine, Greg Gabriel, is here, as is veteran beat reporter for the Daily Herald, Chicago Bears beat reporter Bob Laguerre. Bob, of course, been on the beat for 28 years and part of our partnership and our sharing program with our Pro Football Weekly insert that we conduct with the Daily Herald. You've been reading Bob all season long on those Pro Football Weekly pages. And guys, it's been a little quieter week for the Chicago Bears, but I think probably still interesting. And one of the things we talked about on the TV show, I think the thing that we've all got our eyes on now, is the defensive coaching staff. We had the, as Vic Fangio called it, the coordinator love-in last week, and everything seems settled. And then all of the offensive hires have been announced. The special teams hires have been announced. I know that they've made some hires on the training staff, although those haven't been formally announced yet. And yet, while Vic Fangio said he expects to bring back all of his staff from last year, Greg, none of that's been made official yet. And I don't want to make anything of that. You know, I take Vic at his word, but it just does feel a little strange, a little different that maybe, you know, why haven't they announced Dave Ragone the other day? Why haven't we heard about Ed Donatell, about Glenn Pyers, about Jay Rogers?
Good question, Hub. And I really don't have an answer, but I think, you know, just looking at what's going on, you haven't heard that a coach is out. And I think if it's not that who's coming in, it's who's going out. And we haven't heard anybody going out at this point. So you got to assume, and everybody I talk to, and I traded text with a beat reporter just a little while ago, and he assumes that all of the defensive staff is back for this year.
Yeah, you would assume that it's a slam dunk. They wanted Vic Fangio back badly. Why wouldn't they want everybody on the staff back? And I think they do. I think it'll get done. I don't think it's time to hit the panic button just yet, but it is a little odd that we haven't heard anything yet. I don't know what the delay could be, but I assume all of those guys are still going to be back.
The guy that intrigues me the most is Ed Donatell, in part because he was with Vic in San Francisco, in part because he himself has been a defensive coordinator with three different teams, and I suppose it wouldn't be unreasonable if he was waiting until all the other staffs had been filled out. Worst-kept secret in sports is that Matt Patricia is going to be the head coach of the Lions and Josh McDaniels will be the head coach of the Colts, and you know they've got to do hires. I'm not suggesting that Donatell is leaving to go to one of those spots. But the other thing that intrigues me about Donatell is, guys, you know, when I look at the improvement in Kyle Fuller this season, you know, it was obvious, and Vic kind of let it leak out when he talked one day about have they played golf together during the offseason, some other things that went on, that Vic repaired what appeared to be a shaky relationship with Fuller in 2016. But Donatell, the job he did with Fuller, the job that they did with Prince Amukamara, bringing him in and working him in, developing Eddie Jackson, I thought, Greg, the secondary had an outstanding season, and that's why Donatell, pretty much more than anybody after Fangio off that staff, is the guy that I'd like to lose the least.
Yeah, I agree with you, Hub, and it's going off of last year's tape, it's a strong core group. The key going forward is who's going to be back this coming year as far as the defensive backs go, because you've got two guys in Prince Amukamara and Kyle Fuller who are free agents, and are the Bears going to find a way to retain them? But Donatell's done an outstanding job coaching these guys. I think that the way you've seen them come together as a unit with a bunch of new faces in the secondary last year was just a credit to Ed, the way he worked with these guys.
And you know, Bob, we talked about this. You guys, Bob and Greg, I should tell the audience, sat in on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago, the Chicago Football Now, actually, TV show this week also, and we talked about the free agent the Bears could least afford to lose. In my mind, Bob, there's really only four guys worth talking about. There's other free agents, but the four guys that would worry me the most would be Kyle Fuller. There would be Prince Amukamara. I'd really like to see Christian Jones back. And then I think at this point, you probably want to bring
Sam Acho back. I know he's been a year-to-year guy, but he's done a nice job. I suppose you throw in Patrick O'Donnell, too. But when asked the question on TV, you said, and this is what I agree with, that Fuller is the most important. It is a thin group of free agents at cornerback this year. Now, the two guys who probably have accomplished more are Malcolm Butler of the New England Patriots and Tremaine Johnson of the Rams. You've got Amukamara, you got Fuller, you got Breshad Breeland from Washington. That's about it. But the difference is that Tremaine Johnson is 28, Malcolm Butler is 27, Kyle Fuller is 25 years old. And so while off the face of it, he wouldn't command as much money in free agency as the top two, Johnson and Butler, he may command as much or more because of his age, and he could be a tough sign for the Bears.
Yeah, he's he started, I believe, 42 games in the NFL, and he's only 25. That's key. I think, you know, we mentioned Donatello has done a great job with him. But another guy that is also a restricted free agent is Bryce Callahan, who I think they'd like to have back as well. He and Craven LeBlanc both played pretty well in the nickel spot. And I think you can't have too many cornerbacks in, you know, the NFL in this day and age. But the other guy that kind of flies under the radar as far as his improvement in 2017 is Adrian Amos. He was a guy who started 30 games in his first 2 years and impressed nobody. You know, you never heard anybody talk with glowing praise about Adrian Amos. And he was the Pro Football Focus All-Pro safety this year. Now, I don't know if he had that good of a year, but he clearly had the best year of his career, and I think made some strides. Still needs to make a lot more plays on the ball, but had his best year.
Yeah, don't get me started on Pro Football Focus. I mean, I personally, I'd say it's not worth the paper it's written on, which means it's worth nothing because it's digital. It's not written on paper. So I know what they do, and I know as a member of the media that they provide a lot of stuff that, and some of it, you know, certainly has value. But then you see things like the idea that Adrian Amos was an all-pro safety. I know a little bit about the way they do their grading and their ranking, and I just struggle to take it seriously. I don't know if Greg's going to want to comment on that or not. Feel free if you do. But the other thing I want to ask you to comment on, Greg, is that, you know, free agency is part of the business. There's no question about it. It's a key part of the business. That's how you get a Danny Trevathan. That's how you get an Akeem Hicks. I mean, they've added some nice pieces. They've had some big misses like Mike Glennon, Antrell Roll. I realize he only played a couple games and broke his arm. I didn't like the Quentin Demp signing when it happened. I'm not wild about that. He's back this year as well. But where I'm going with this is that as much as I want to see Fuller back and some other guys, Ryan Pace has been adamant that this team is going to be built through the draft. And that's why it's going to take a little longer than some folks would like. Going into his fourth draft, this may be the first year where it's reasonable to expect them to compete, certainly by next year. As a guy who spent a decade as the Bears director of college scouting, I'm guessing that warms your heart a little bit. And realistically, it is the right way to build the team. The problem is that by the time those first and second draft classes get to their third and fourth season, you got to figure out a way to protect them again.
Yeah, that's true. But the one thing I want to go back to is he said he wants to build the team through the draft. But in order to build the team through the draft, you got to have a number of draft picks. And since he's been here, they haven't had that. You know, there's really been a low number of draft picks, and he's traded up, given away some picks to trade up 2 years in a row. So that lessens the number of draft picks. So now you got to go back to free agency and rely on free agency to get some players to fill in the blank. So it's really and they have had some big hits, and where they've hit is with some of these young guys that are maybe just starting to come into their own. You can get them at a little cheaper cost than some of the older guys, more established guys, and they've hit with those guys when they have tried to get the older guys. That's where they've struck out.
Bob, I'm going to ask you and then get back to Greg for his opinion as well, because we talk about this draft. Everybody knows the performance of most of the picks, but there's a couple guys, because, again, this wasn't meant to be the defensive backfield or secondary edition of the podcast, but two of the kids that I really liked in 16, I was intrigued by DeAndre Hall and what we saw of him in 16 when they were trying to play him at cornerback. I felt he was supposed to be a safety, would be better as a safety, and he played more safety than corner in training camp in 17, and then ended up on IR most of the year. And then Deion Bush, who they also took in the fourth round of 16, who I really liked coming out of Miami. Now, you know, Bush has had his time on the field and hasn't made the most of it, but Hall is a kid who we still haven't seen a lot of, and I don't know what your and Greg's observations are of what you've seen of those two, but they could also be pieces of this puzzle as you look at where do we want to strengthen, you know, our depth and our talent.
Well, I think the first thing the Bears have to do is decide if DeAndre Hall is a safety or a cornerback. There's some school of thought that says he can play both. I think probably a cornerback is more valuable. Deion Bush, as you mentioned, I think started 7 games as a rookie and then regressed this year, was really not much of a factor at all. The other guy from that draft, DeAndre Houston Carson, probably doesn't figure in the secondary or in the defense at all, but has emerged as a pretty good special teams player.
Yeah, it's, you know, going back to when they drafted DeAndre Hall and when you and I did the draft broadcast together on day 3 of the draft, that was a guy that I was really hoping the Bears would take. Really liked his tape from Northern Iowa. Kind of reminded me of a poor man's Tillman coming out of college. Same type of body, tall, long guy. Not the smoothest guy, but who needed technique work. I think there's still upside with him, but he's been hurt 2 years in a row, which has been the case with a lot of these guys. And is the train going to pass him by as we go forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be the question. And, you know, I think, you know, unfortunately, Bob, Greg just used some of the operative words. He's been hurt both years. It's been, in many respects, the story. And I have to call it the Ryan Pace regime, but I'm not putting this on Ryan. I mean, you can't. Injuries, you never know who to put them on. And most of it is just bad luck. But there are some teams that have fewer of the nagging soft tissue type injuries than the Chicago Bears. And DeAndre Hall actually is one who ended up on injured reserve for the better part of the year with that type of problem. You know, I mean, he didn't tear a knee, he didn't break an arm. You know, he had an injury, and they just said, well, it's not going to heal in time. And I mentioned at the top of the podcast that I know they've made some adjustments with the training and development staff, but we haven't heard those announcements yet. As a matter of fact, I don't think we've formally heard who the new strength and conditioning coach is. But clearly, in addition to hopefully a new and improved coaching staff, in addition to a new focus on offense, in addition to Mitch Trubisky in his second year, as well as some of the other young players that are developing, if this team can't stay healthier, they're probably not going to get that much better.
No, not at least not until they get better depth. There are a lot of teams in the NFL that have the same number of injuries as the Bears, but they have better depth, so you don't hear as much about it. There's not that precipitous drop-off from a starter to a second-string guy, and I think they're still struggling to shore up the bottom half of their roster, and there is a big drop-off when they lose a starter. And it's funny because if you go through, especially the defense, and look at their impact guys, every other sentence is, well, he's played well when he's healthy, when he's been on the field. Danny Trevathan, Jarrell Freeman, the list goes on and on. Kyle Fuller missed an entire season. So, you know, I don't know what they can do differently, but they at least have to try something different because this has been 3 years running that they've had the injury problems that they can't really recover from.
Greg, I you're probably tired of me constantly referring to all your experience in the NFL, but the bottom line is you know more than the rest of us because you were there in front offices, not so much when you were scouting on the road, but certainly as a director of college scouting for 10 years, both on the road and in the front office. How do teams focus on this particular problem? How do you identify better coaching and training? And is there anything, because you've been living in the area, that you've noticed the last few years that the Bears do that may be different from others that may be, you know, contributing to some of this?
Well, I can't answer what they do or what they don't do because they don't allow us into Hallis Hall to watch the guys work out in the weight room. But that said, you know, going back to when I first came here in 2001, and for those first few years when Dick Geron was the coach, we had an inordinate amount of injuries, one of the highest rates in the league. And we sat down, we talked about it. We ended up firing the strength coach and bringing in Rusty Jones, who had an impeccable record in Buffalo. And while he was in Buffalo, which was 20-plus years, the injury percentage for the Buffalo Bills was one of the best in the league as far as keeping guys healthy. And as soon as Rusty got here, things started changing. Guys started, I'm not going to say being in better shape, but they ate right, they trained right. We had a very minimal amount of soft tissue injuries. In fact, Rusty would blame himself if there's a soft tissue injury because then he thought he didn't get through to the player as what he, as far as the proper training techniques to prevent those. And a lot of that has nothing to do with overexertion and lifting. A lot of it is just nutrition and hydrating yourself enough as you prepare for practice, and especially in the summer when it's so hot and those guys are running around with pads. So, you know, it's something the Bears had looked at very closely a year ago going into that offseason. They made some changes, and it really made no difference. They still had one of the highest injury rates in the league. So whoever is going to be taking over, and they have a turnover in the training department and the strength department, I think the key is going to be on them as to how they are going to set up the programs with these kids.
You've got the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Be sure and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also give us a review if you would like. We would appreciate it. We are brought to you by Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming. Check them out at lootcrate.com. And, Bob, I'm going to see if we can break a little news here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. It won't be earth-shaking, but I've been meaning to ask Greg this question for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, and I haven't. Rusty Jones is legend in the NFL. You talk to an Olin Krutz. You talk to a Brian Urlacher, Thomas Jones, I can go on and on with Liz Bernard Berrien. Guys I've talked to over the years will tell you he's the best they ever worked with. Scott Bechtold is a guy who's actually from Central Illinois but was the director of media relations in Buffalo for 20-some years, and we got friendly over the years. And I believe it was at the Super Bowl back in January of 05, following the 04 season, when Scott came over and grabbed me. He said, "I got to tell you something. You guys, because that was my last year in the Bears booth, you guys just stole the best strength and conditioning guy in the NFL," and they got Rusty to come from Buffalo to Chicago, and as Greg just reported, just the best that I'm aware of. These are guys who kind of fly under the radar. So the question is, Greg, you're a Buffalo guy. Were you involved in the identification and recruitment of Rusty Jones, or were you just lucky to benefit from it?
No, but I know what happened, and I met him shortly after that. Actually, Rusty was a USFL survivor, and Hank Bulla became the coach in Buffalo, the famous Hank Bulla. And no, you wouldn't like that because you're a Michigan guy, and he's a Michigan State guy. But anyway, Hank was coaching the Pittsburgh franchise in the USFL, and Rusty was a strength coach, and he brought Rusty up to Buffalo, and the rest is history.
All right, and by the way, that's a great segue. We've only got a couple minutes left here, but I got to get an opinion from Bob and Greg as well. As we are recording the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast for you, we're about 2 hours away from a press conference with the one and only Vince McMahon, who's going to be announcing the official return of the XFL. And my question is why, you know, and I'm sure we'll get to that. And obviously the answer is the almighty dollar, and somebody's figured out they think they can make some money. But, you know, Bob, when I look at what's going on, I know this is not Chicago Bear-centric, but I think it's interesting to all professional football fans. What's going on in the NFL right now, they're battling on a lot of fronts. I mean, it is still the king of professional sports. It's the king of entertainment. It's the king of TV. And yet the trending is not good. TV ratings have been down. You've got the problems with the officiating. You've got the player protest. You've got the whole political environment with more liberal-leaning NFL owners than people realize. Just because they're wealthy doesn't mean they're Republicans or conservatives. But the point is, and I'm not going political here, I'm just making the point, there is a split amongst NFL owners as to how many like the involvement of the federal government in their sport and how many don't. One of the many issues they've had to deal with this year. And suddenly Vince McMahon is telling us we need the XFL back. I didn't need it the first time. I don't think it's a good idea, and I don't understand why they're doing it, but maybe I'm in the minority. I mean, is there room at this stage in pro football for another United States-based professional football league?
It doesn't seem so. You know, you would think a league like that and all these leagues that have tried to make it rely almost exclusively on television contracts. If TV ratings are down for the NFL, they're certainly not going to be good for the XFL. I mean, I was around when the XFL was here, and I covered some of those games. And, you know, it was basically, as far as live attendance, it was intimate gatherings for the most part. They're not going to make money at the gate, and I don't see a forum for them to make money in TV at this juncture.
You know, when I look at it, and my thought is more on the big picture, because they can't compete with the NFL. Nobody has ever been able to compete with the NFL. People have tried, and every time they do it, they fail. But there is a need for a developmental league. And if he can somehow tie in with the NFL and be used as a developmental league in the spring, then there's a use for it. And I think it would be especially useful for quarterbacks because it gets them live snaps that they're not getting in the NFL. They don't get them in practice because of the way things are set up. And they really don't – and they don't – once the season starts, they don't have anything or any play time at all unless there's an injury. So I think from that aspect and the development – the way the rules are now in the NFL, the way the practice rules have changed with the new CBA, practice the way we used to know practice – 7, 8, 9, 15 years ago is completely different, and it's really hurt the young player as far as development. And I can, you know, I said the quarterbacks and the other, it's offensive linemen and defensive linemen. They don't get enough live reps to really perfect their technique. And that's where another league that if it's tied in with the NFL can be very, very beneficial to player growth in the league.
All right, guys, and as I said, we're actually visiting ahead of the press conference, so without any details, I don't want to go too hard on them, but from my own personal and, in this case, very biased opinion, because I've never understood the whole pro wrestling thing, the whole Vince McMahon thing and all that good stuff. The one good thing the XFL gave us was He Hate Me, and I can't remember the kid's real name. He did end up in the NFL, so they did develop that player, and I guess in that regard it was kind of fun. But getting back to the game itself, we're going to have to wrap this up in a minute or two. Hopefully you guys will join us regularly on our Pro Football Weekly and Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, but probably won't get a chance to visit again prior to Super Bowl 52. And so I want to ask you each a double-edged question, and I will ask you first, Bob, and then we'll go to Greg. The Super Bowl in Minneapolis, your thoughts, Rod Smart, thank you. Dan Mott, our producer, was calling it up for me as we went. Rod Smart, a kick returner and receiver slash defensive back, who did have a short career in the NFL after the XFL, but in the XFL he was known as He Hate Me. But getting back to the Super Bowl, Bob, your thoughts, probably on a minor level, about playing it in Minneapolis. We know it's only because they built the stadium, but nonetheless, you know, is it a good thing to take it north once in a while? Remember, last time we were north was in New Jersey when they opened MetLife Stadium, and it turned out like 50-some degrees the first Sunday in February. That's not likely to happen in Minneapolis. And more importantly, the matchup itself, your thoughts on the Patriots and the Vikings.
As a person who's covered many Super Bowls, I think it's a horrible idea to have it in Minnesota. And people will counter that by saying, well, the game's inside. Yeah, the game's inside. That's for 3 hours. For the rest of the week, when you're running to and from press conferences, you're outside. You know, part of the allure of the Super Bowl for somebody who covers it has always been going to a warm weather climate. That being said, I think I'm not going to go out on a limb like some people and predict the Eagles to win, but I think their defense is more than good enough to keep them in the game, and I think a lot depends on Nick Foles. Is he going to be the guy who played as well as he did in his first game when he came in for Carson Wentz and played as well as he did last week? Or is he going to be the guy who played those middle three or four games where he was very mediocre and the offense had zero of the big play potential that it showed with Carson Wentz? I think if you look at his last performance, I think, yeah, they have a chance to win, or if not win, keep it close. I would still take the Patriots to win the game, though.
I'm going the other way. I like the Eagles, and number one, talking about Foles, go back to when Foles got his first large amount of play time, and that was with Chip Kelly running the offense. He got to the Pro Bowl, and he threw only two interceptions. I think, if I remember correctly, his touchdown to interception ratio was 29-2, and I'm pulling that one out. I may be off. But he really played excellent football, and people thought that he had a bright future. And it, you know, everything fell apart for him. I think he lost confidence in himself. The way he played last week against Minnesota, I thought, was remarkable. I don't think there are very many people in the world outside of me and a couple others, because I tweeted it out, so it's verified, that I thought that Philadelphia was going to win the game. Not only did they win, they won by a blowout. And I think, I'm not going to say they're going to blow out New England, I just have a feeling that this is Philly's year, that they're going to do everything right to make sure they get that win.
Well, Greg, I actually was a big Nick Foles fan from that season. In addition to various things we do, I do the national radio call for Westwood One on a lot of NFL games. Was doing the Sunday night game of the week back in 2013. Have moved to Monday night since, but did three of the Eagles' games that year, including their playoff loss. And so I'm 99% sure you're very close. I think it was 27-2 on the touchdown interception ratio. But your point is still the same. I never understood how Foles fell so far as he did, and I don't think he did. I think he had a rough year the next year, then got traded. It never worked in St. Louis, as it didn't work for any other quarterback in St. Louis with that staff. And I don't think he's Tom Brady. I don't think he's Drew Brees. But I think the guy we saw last Sunday in the championship game is closer to who he is than the guy who struggled for 3 years trying to get back on the field. One more question before we let you guys go. I'll talk about the Super Bowl next week with Arthur on this podcast. The Philadelphia Eagles in 2016, I want to say they were 5-11. They may have been 6-10. They were either 5-11 or 6-10 with a rookie quarterback, and they're in the Super Bowl. Can the Chicago Bears be a legitimate Super Bowl contender in 2018, Greg?
I'm not going to say no, and I'm not going to say yes. A lot of things come into that. Number one, they got to stay healthy. And if you can stay healthy, it's not a bad football team, but they still don't have all the parts. And that's where this offseason is going to be very, very important between free agency and the draft. You've got to get some playmakers on the offense. You've got to keep guys healthy. I think they need one more good offensive lineman, stick him in at right tackle. And then if Sitton and Long can stay healthy, that's a pretty solid offensive line as compared to all the rest in the league. And the defense, like we said before, got to stay healthy. That's a good defense. It's a strong defense. They can make plays. They can create turnovers. But with guys going out every other game, that makes it tough to win.
Super Bowl contender, I say definitely not. Playoff contender, I could definitely see that. I think they've got a base, and Greg kind of touched on it. They have some very good players. I don't know that they have any impact players at this time, and that's the main thing they're lacking, and I think that's what they need to take the next step.
Yeah, I think both the atmosphere and the roster more closely resemble the 2016 Rams than the 2016 Eagles. We've written and talked about that. I should say I've written and talked about that. But you look at the Philadelphia Eagles and the offseason moves just this year, brought back Foles, traded for Jay Ajayi, brought in LeGarrette Blount, brought in Alshon Jeffrey, brought in Torrey Smith. You go over on the defensive side, you add a Chris Long, a few other players there. Look at those cornerbacks. It's all about the offseason and what the Chicago Bears are doing right now. Guys, we are out of time, but I want to give my thanks to Greg Gabriel, our Pro Football Weekly personnel director, and Bob Laguerre, longtime Chicago Bears beat reporter and a regular contributor to Pro Football Weekly, soon to be even more regular. We'll have some announcements on that going forward. But for today's Chicago Bears podcast, I should say our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, we thank you all so much for listening. Again, don't forget to check out LootCrate.com. LootCrate's the best surprise you know is coming. Go to iTunes, subscribe to us, give us a review if you like, and be back next week when our managing editor Arthur Arkush will be back in the host chair, and we will get you ready for more Chicago Bears offseason updates and Super Bowl 52. For now, thank you so much for listening.